Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
According to court documents, Zion Williamson's stepfather received a $400,000 payment from a marketing agent before he went to play for Duke. Zion's lawyer has since responded, saying the accusations are not true and the documents filed are false. So, Shannon, what is your reaction to this?
Skip, I can believe it. This happens all the time. I don't know why people are surprised. Yep. Let me tell you why people are surprised. Because it's Duke. Let somebody level this against Coach Cal at Kentucky. Let someone allege this against Bill Self at Kansas. Well, yep, that happened. That's it.
Well, he's under fire as we speak.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But because it's Coach K,
yep,
because it's Duke, no. That's right. That would never happen. Stop. Mm-hmm. You're not getting all these. Every year, the same handful of teams get the top 5, 6, 7 recruits year after year after year. And they're just doing it. Why? Mm-hmm. And the guy, he's only staying long enough. He's going for the same reason Shannon Sharp went to Savannah State, for eligibility purposes. Mm-hmm. But only difference is I needed to stay eligible for 4 years. They need to stay eligible for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
They're no closer to getting a degree to hang on their wall than when they arrived. So stop this notion. Oh, they went there for the education. Really? How close you think Zion to get a degree? Kyrie from getting a degree. R.J. Barrett from getting a degree. Them guys stay in 1 year and they bouncing.
Yep.
The same thing with Carl Anthony Towns, A.D., and all those guys that went to Kentucky. So stop this notion. I'm mad, though. I'm mad he only got $400,000. Do you know how much money Zion Williamson put in Duke's athletic budget?
I agree with that.
Man, he should have got $3-4 million.
I agree.
Man, if I'm going out, I'm going out of a blaze of glory. Hey, you going to talk about my parents got something? Oh, yeah. Like LeBron said, if I was going to Ohio State, me and my mama weren't going to be living in no apartment anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I wish he'd have got $5 million. The only problem that I have, Skip, if Zion Williamson signed a document to sign with this marketing company, he should honor that agreement. That's all I'm saying. Hey, I don't care how much you took. He could have got $10 million for all I care.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sign it, don't renege. You know, you take the money, you blow up, and then all of a sudden, you want them to be out of the money that they gave you because they gave it to you, if that's the case, Skip, to sign with their organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only problem. I ain't got no problem with him taking the money. Hell, I wish he'd have got $4 million instead of $400,000.
I hear you, which is why I have a hard time working up any outrage over this.
Yeah.
Usually in these cases where there's a little smoke, there's a lot of fire.
Right.
So do I believe something went on? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Has it been proven in court? Not yet.
No.
Because the attorney for Zion is calling this fraudulent, that this is all fake, that it was forged, because there's a signature page in which you see his signature on it, mm-hmm, and he printed his name.
Right.
And then he had to put his driver's license to it, and we see a picture of his driver's license in the year in which he was at Duke,
mm-hmm,
or actually going into the year when he was at,
correct,
Duke, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they are saying these are forgeries, okay? So I don't know what to believe, but just for people to understand what is happening here, there's a woman named Gina Ford. Her, mm-hmm, company is called Prime Marketing Sports. She, mm-hmm, signed Zion before he went to Duke.
Or she thought she did.
She did for a little while.
Right.
But college rules allow Zion to get out from under those kinds of deals just to protect the kids if they so choose. And
right,
he decided after he started to become a big national star, I belong at CAA.
Correct.
And he used that loophole in the college rules to get out from under this deal,
right,
to sign with CAA. She is obviously very angry about this.
Yeah.
So she is trying to prove in court that he should have been disqualified as a college player,
right,
so the rules shouldn't have applied to her,
right,
because he shouldn't have even been allowed to play at Duke,
right,
because he had taken,
right,
money.
And if he's taking money, he's not an amateur.
Yeah.
He's a pro.
He's a pro. And by the way, she also alleges he accepted housing provided by a Duke alumnus and 3 luxury cars while he was at Duke. Well, those are other things that would pile on,
yeah,
this. Is it possible that in the end, Duke will be forced to forfeit the Zion games, all, yeah, the Zion? It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Will anybody really care? I don't think so. It doesn't look great for Duke. It doesn't look great for Zion. But in the end, I think we all believe they should be paid anyway.
Yeah.
So to me, if he took money, he broke a bad rule.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Right?
Because if you think about it, Skip, Zion Williamson, that 1 year at Duke, how much would he have made off his image and likeness? I guarantee it'd have been more than $400,000.
It'd been, what'd you say, $4 million?
Yeah.
Let's go much higher than that.
So he was about to try to get him on the cheap. Like I said, I'm not upset. Skip it, this happens. It's going on as we speak, and it should. I don't get mad at no player for accepting any benefits because you should.
Are you going to think any less of Zion?
Hell no.
No.
I think less of him because he didn't get more money. I wish he'd got right. He should have made, look, give me $1 million. And them cars, good. I hope one of them was a Ferrari. Skip, this is, look, there's a story that said Herschel Walker was coming out. He was the number one recruit coming out. And they said, I think Danny Ford was at Clemson. He said, Danny Ford called Vince Dooley and said, they said, Vince, now, if you don't tell the NCAA, we won't tell the NCAA that you put gas in that boy's car if you don't tell them we bought it for it. So, Skip, this has been going on for a long time. Chip Banks came out of Augusta.
Yep.
He was going to wanted to go to a school.
Yep.
He told him, say, his mom needs a new refrigerator. They bought the refrigerator. They said, well, how did he end up at USC? They put the refrigerator in the house they built for him. So, Skip, this is nothing new.
No.
So I ain't mad at Zion. You want me to get upset. Oh, Zion, how could you do that? You know the rules, and?
Okay, obviously Zion, up to this point, has a reputation as almost being like a cartoon superhero,
yes.
Right? So some people will say, God, he took money to go to Duke.
Yeah, he should have.
Okay, he should have. Maybe some people will think a little less of him, but I think it will be quickly forgotten. And I think Duke, I would be shocked if they suffered any NCAA penalties.
It's Duke.
It's Duke.
Because, Skip, you know, I mean, when you think of Duke, you think of the prestige and it costs you, what, $60,000 a year to go there and the medical and everything. Oh, Duke, prestige. Mm-hmm. So you don't believe in Coach K. Coach K has a pristine resume.
Yep.
Coached the Olympics. He's won, what, 5 national titles. Many think he's the first or second best college coach of all time behind here, Coach Wooden. So nobody's going to believe that. Man, Coach K wouldn't do that. Dude, why would he do that at Duke? But I don't care.
And he has plausible deniability because he could just say, I had no idea.
I didn't give him
no
money.
To this, right.
But everybody else, they say, Bill Self, you lack institutional control. If you didn't know, you should have known. That's what they tell Coach K.
That's what they say. And Bill Self is firing back at them. Okay. No mercy.
UFC 251 is headlined by Jorge Masvidal stepping in at the last minute to take on welterweight champion Kamaru Usman. The reigning champ feels confident heading into the fight, calling Masvidal weak-minded and saying that he doesn't have faith in him. So, Shannon, who wins this fight?
Yep, I'm taking Usman only slightly, but I do believe Masvidal has an advantage because Usman was preparing to fight Gilbert Burns, who's a different type of fighter than what Masvidal is.
Got it.
The question that I have is that how deep in training with Masvidal, but he did take this fight on very short notice. Now, he says he's been in the gym, was going to the gym 2-3 times a week, but how intense was that training? Usman carries the pace, and he can go deep into the round. So can Masvidal go 5 5-minute rounds? That's what's going to be asked because the title is on the line of this. And Usman, I don't know, people don't know, but he's for real. He's legit, Skip. He ran through Colby Covington. He doing all that talking, you know, he's a MAGA guy, Trump, he's supporting, and Usman ran through him.
He
ran through Tyron Woodley, Dos Anjos, carried him. So he legit. But Masvidal, for some reason, he's found new faith, new confidence, and he got hands of dynamite. But I hope he doesn't think that's Nate Diaz that he's going in the ring with, because Usman is legit. So I'm going to take Usman in this fight because I don't know, if it goes the distance, if it goes past a couple of rounds, Usman is a decided advantage.
Gotcha.
But I think Masvidal is going to try to take him out early.
He better. I am with you on this, and I start with that picture we see right there on the wall behind us. Take a look at that man on the left. He is a much bigger man than Masvidal is. Usman, I read the other day, he walks around at 190-ish. And they're going to fight at 170?
Yes.
Okay? So he is considerably bigger than he is.
Yes.
And I feel sorry for this man because I root for Masvidal. He's the closest thing we have to Conor McGregor.
Yes.
he will say just about anything to hype a fight. And it's funny and it's entertaining, and he's entertaining in the octagon. He's fun to watch. I am going to watch this, but I am going to fear for him because it took him to age 35 to get his first title fight, and he got it sort of by accident, by COVID accident.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, COVID interrupted another thing that we got going in sports. And on the very shortest of notices, Dana White said, well, the fans wanted this one anyway. Jorge, you want to do it?
Right.
Yeah, I'll do it. Well, then you're going to have to fly to Vegas to get tested. Then you're going to have to fly all the way halfway around the world to Abu Dhabi to Fight Island. And you're going to have to keep getting tested.
And then you got to quarantine again.
Yeah. And it's hard because you haven't been training.
Right.
When I heard Masvidal say the other day, I've been going to the gym a couple times a week.
Right.
A couple of times a week? That guy lives in the gym.
Yeah.
And the fight you're about to enter is going to be a gym kind of fight where you better be... You better be ready to go the distance because this guy can take you the distance. Mm-hmm. I do agree with all you said about Gilbert Burns. That was going to be a ground battle that the two of them were preparing for. This guy wants to grapple. This guy wants to, again, Usman wants to take you down.
Yeah.
The only hope and advantage that Masvidal has, he is a dangerous striker.
Yes.
His striking is like his personality. Mm-hmm. He can strike from long distance.
He's swinging for the fences.
He's swinging for the fences, and he has one-shot knockout power. Mm-hmm. So if he could catch him one time, one good early time, and either hurt him or deck him, maybe he's got a shot.
Right.
But other than that, to your point, if this grinds on and he starts to take him down,
Yeah, Skip, when you look at him, I mean, he's won 15 straight fight, Usman, 11-0 since joining the UFC. I mean, we don't normally see guys. You got to go back. You got to think about Anderson Silva that won this many consecutive fights. You got to go George St. Pierre or Johnny Jones. Skip, we don't normally see guys string together a stretch like this.
Yeah.
Because unlike boxing, Dana White doesn't allow you to pick and choose. You ain't finna get rich fighting bums in that sport. You're going to fight the best of the best. And somebody clips you, and guess what? Mm. You 15-1, or you're 15-2. So
wait, did you just say Floyd Mayweather got rich fighting bums?
No.
I think you suggested that.
In boxing, you see, it's not. And now, I mean, since Floyd, you know, he controlled his own fights. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like Leonard was fighting Hearn, fighting Duran, fighting Hagler, fighting all those guys. Back then, you know, the heavyweights, they fought everybody.
Ali Frazier, Ali Foreman, Ali Norton, Ali
Yes.
He took them all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't the number one contender now. And see, they only one belt. There's only one UFC belt per division.
Mm-hmm.
So it ain't nowhere. I got the WBA, you got the WBC, the WBO, the WBA. None of all that stuff, Skip.
Yep.
You got one belt. And you want it, come get it.
Mm.
And Dana White's like, nah, I ain't none of that. You know, if that's the fight the fans want to see, because, Skip, you know the fight that we wanted to see. We wanted to see prime Pacquiao, prime Mayweather. But we got that, we believe, past their prime, or at least 5 years later than what we really cared
for. I'll buy that.
So, but in the UFC, nah. If it's a fight, that thing gonna happen. Let the fans, whatever the fight may be. You know, soon they're going to be enough pressure that Johnny Jones is going to have to move up the heavyweight and fight Ngannou.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hey, that's the fight. They don't make it happen.
So Masvidal has had to wait the second longest of any man or woman in UFC to get his first title shot.
Right.
35 years of age, little to no real training, and here we go.
He just fight.
You better just go out there and let it fly.
Yeah.
And hope you connect one early shot.
I was watching his story and how he kind of started. He got it started in Miami in these backyard fights like Kimbo Slice.
He did.
And so basically, I mean, he fights.
He's a brawler.
You know, ain't no skipping all that technical side. You know, you look at Johnny Jones. Johnny Jones can strike.
Yeah.
He can take you down because he's a wrestler. This kid was a NCAA wrestler also. Mm-hmm. So they got, you know, they can take you down.
Mm-hmm.
He fights.
Yep.
That's what he does. He fights. He's a fighter.
It's a great contrast of styles.
It is.
Great.
But Usman, for the most part, he's been able to get anybody he wanted to get him on the ground, he's been able to do it.
I hope it doesn't turn into Khabib and Conor. Remember how that ended?
Yeah. He got him on the ground and just kept him on the ground for the longest.
And then just choked him out. God.
I think Usman going to want to punish him, though, Skip.
He will.
That's the easy way.
Especially after he said he's going to break his face.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to baptize him and decapitate him. I hope it isn't the other way around.
All I know is I'm going to be watching.
Yeah.
Well, they literally just did weigh-ins. They both made weight, so they are good to go. Fight Island is on, you guys. Woo! No mercy. Tom Curran of NBC Sports Boston is saying we have falsely been labeling Tom Brady as the GOAT. While he admitted that Brady is the best quarterback ever, he dubbed Jerry Rice as a true football GOAT. Curran pointed out that when Rice retired, he held 38 NFL records and had averaged 77 receptions for his 20-year career. So, Shannon, do you agree?
Hey, why you ask? I guess here's the thing. Everybody's been taking pot shots at your guy, you know, Tom Brady. First, it was Randy Moss for like 4 days straight. And now it's Tom Curran, who's been in. And Tom Curran and I, we haven't agreed on much. but I agree on this one. But, Skip, I've said this. If you let me write the oral argument, I can make the very compelling case for two people, and that's Jerry Rice and Lawrence Taylor, as the best players to ever play in the NFL. Because Lawrence Taylor made two positions famous. If you did not have a left tackle, you could not beat the Giants, and you could not represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. So he made Washington go Jacoby and the Jim Lachey's, and he made you go get a Gary Zimmerman, and he made you get a Wallace for San Francisco and the Irv Eatman. You had to have that, or you couldn't beat him. And now you see everybody's like, well, hold on. Not only do we need a left tackle, can we find somebody? Can we get a Derek Thomas or Cornelius Bennett, a Von Miller, Khalil Mack, a T.J. Watt? All these guys was because of 5-6 at the Giants. And I just keep telling you, I don't even know what, I mean, I don't even really know what to say about Jerry. Because what he did, Skip, Jerry was a guy, not only could he get deep, but Jerry was one of the first guys that could take a 5-yard route and turn it into an 80-yard spectacular. Because in the true West Coast, it's all about getting the ball in the guy's hands and running after the catch. And you look at the guys that played, I'm talking about the really good receivers that played in the West Coast. Jerry, my brother, T.O., all of them could do what? Run after catch. They ran angry. And for me, Skip, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to touch his records. I don't see anybody getting 22,000 yards. I don't see that 197 receiving touchdown, Skip. That ain't happening. It's over. Forget it. I mean, let that sink in. Who's still playing? Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald is like 70 touchdowns away. Skip, he never going to get it. He's like 8,000 yards away. He's never going to get it. So for me, Tom Curran is right. I can make the argument for either one, but if he says Jerry, I won't fight him. If he just said Lawrence Taylor, I wouldn't have fought him. I just will fight you if you say you know who.
The lengths you will go to.
I ain't going nowhere.
To discredit Tom Brady's goatness. The lengths you will reach for to undercut him, to demean his football reputation, to try to make the silly case that he's not the GOAT. Of the case you just made, I will give you Lawrence Taylor before I'll give you Jerry Rice. Because Lawrence Taylor did not play a dependent position. He wreaked havoc from the other side of the ball. He was virtually unblockable.
He was.
He destroyed entire offenses. So I'll give you at least that it's a viable argument. But with Jerry Rice, as much I know Jerry very well, I have nothing but awe and respect for him, but I feel like it's beneath my dignity to have to stoop to even do this argument with you, because it's not even close. It's what? Not even an argument.
Yeah.
Jerry won how many MVPs?
None.
He won one Super Bowl MVP that was a little fraudulent.
How?
Because the votes had to be in with about a minute left in the game. That's the way the NFL had to do business in those days. I was sitting right there in the press box watching this in Miami, early 1989. Uh-huh. Bengals, Super Bowl 23, great number. And Jerry had 200 and some yards.
Yeah, I think he had 206, something like that.
And yet, votes are in, and Joe Montana throws a last-second touchdown pass to the other receiver, John Taylor, to win the football game. Joe should have been that MVP the way he was the MVPs of his other Super Bowls. Shannon, you know this better than anybody on this planet. That position, as was yours, is a dependent position. Mm-hmm. It is far, far, far harder to take the snap, to read the defense, to avoid the onrushers and try to keep your eyes upfield to find the most open target and to throw that target a catchable pass, an accurate catchable pass. It's far, far, far harder to do that than to catch that pass. I'm sorry, you're disqualified by the very position you play if you're giving me Jerry Rice versus Tom Brady.
Well, I think the thing is, Skipper, for me is that I value guys that are not as protected. You know, Tom Brady, every snap, he has five guys protecting him, sometimes six or seven. Jerry didn't have that.
Okay, but he also has five guys trying to knock him down.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Jerry, how many Jerry got? What you think? Just imagine if Jerry says, you know what? I'm going to catch this ball, but I got a tight end down the field that's going to block the safety before he hits me. Or I'm going to have another receiver on the other side that's going to block. That's what Tom Brady has, Skip. And you look at Jerry. Now, imagine, Skip, Jerry put up the lion's share of his yards in a running league. Jerry's offense, his first 5 years, they were top 10 in rushing.
It was revolutionary. It was invented by his head coach.
Yes.
The great Bill Walsh. I think he's the greatest coach ever.
And
he picked Jerry.
He stole Jerry.
Because he didn't run fast.
He did.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Skip, when Jerry had 22 receiving touchdowns in 1987, they led the league in rushing.
Yep.
Name a team. So whoever led the league, so what do you think the likelihood of a receiver for the Baltimore Ravens, because they led the league in rushing, what do you think the likelihood of them having a receiver that leads the league in touchdown reception and while leading the league in rushing? Because that's what he did. He did that.
He was great at what he did. You can argue he was the all-time greatest, though I always argue Michael Irvin, because Michael had an intangible Jerry has never had. Jerry was more of a follower than a leader. Michael was the driving force, the leader of teams that should have won maybe five straight Super Bowls if Jimmy and Jerry had been able to stay together.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, I was there. He was the epicenter of that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he had his issues off the field, but he could lead on the field, locker room, sideline, huddle, the way no receiver, to me, has ever led a football team.
You do know Jerry got 750 more catches.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got that.
He has 11,000 more yards. He has 130 touchdowns more.
Okay, those were definitely running Cowboy teams with Emmitt Smith, who is the all-time leading rusher.
Yes.
But in the end, all you need to know is that Brady has won three MVPs to Jerry zero.
Jerry got two offensive players of the year, I think.
Okay, but on MVPs, the guy who dominates the league, Jerry doesn't have a chance to win that award.
Right.
Okay. So Tom Brady, in 20 years in Foxborough, played in 9 Super Bowls and won 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
6 out of 9.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry won 3 Super Bowls in 4 tries.
Yep.
Okay. It's very good. I'll even give you great. This is all-time greatest. This is Tom Brady, who never had a superstar receiver except for a glimpse of Randy Moss in 2007. It was really only 07, mm-hmm. and he had Gronkowski. I will give you those two. But other than that, he's done it with a lot of nothing. And meanwhile, Jerry Rice, and again, it's a dependent position, so you're a product of the creator is the quarterback, and he got to play with Joe Montana and Steve Young, Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. for a coach who, again, to me, was the greatest ever.
Mm-hmm.
Greatest offensive mind and the greatest picker of players mm-hmm. that I've ever seen was Bill Walsh.
Right.
So he was right place, right time, and he was great, all-time great at what he did. But what he did does not measure up to Brady's position as the quarterback and the leader in the locker room of a Patriot Way culture in which the coach was a tyrant. The coach was a sarcastic, verbally abusing dictator.
We tried to win, right?
Okay, I got it. But it took Tom Brady in the locker room saying, hey, guys, it's just the way he is. We're going to be okay. Tom Brady was the buffer between the tyrant and a bunch of players who often wanted to revolt against the tyrant because you can't talk to me like that in practice or film session. It's okay, said Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. We're going to win in spite of. And they won. They got to 9 Super Bowls in 20 years.
Well, he became that. He wasn't always like
no,
that.
No, but
he didn't talk to LT like that.
Okay. Who didn't? Oh, Belichick.
Belichick. Hell no.
No, but once he failed in Cleveland, mm-hmm. was failing in New England, mm-hmm. and once Brady fell out of his heaven into his lap out of the sixth round, and they won one Super Bowl more because of their defense right. and the offense. Napoleon took right. over.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens, Skip, because once you win that title, Skip, once you have a Super Bowl behind your resume,
yep.
it's almost like, okay, whatever he says is gospel.
Yep.
It's kind of like a quarterback that has that Super Bowl. When Peyton Manning goes to Denver, they realize what he, Kurt Warner goes to Arizona. That's instant credibility. So any coach, obviously, Mike McCarthy now is in Dallas, he has instant credibility, Skip, because he has that Lombardi. And after you've been in the league and you haven't won it, you realize how hard it is, and he has one. Mm. Coach Belichick has six. So how does anybody go to New England and not listen to what he has to say?
Okay. My final point to you is this. Tom Brady still does not get enough credit for winning six rings with six game-winning drives. Montana Super Bowls, except for that last one, were huge blowouts.
Well, he had a game-winning drive in the first one and the second, both against Cincinnati, with game-winning drives. Mm-hmm. Except Miami, he blew Miami out the water, and they blew
Denver. It was a complete New Orleans, wipeout.
That was before I got there. I wouldn't doubt about it. That'd make things different.
I got it. I appreciate that. Tom Brady has never benefited from a Super Bowl blowout. He had to go win it fairly late to very late mm-hmm. in all those games, and he pulled off game-winning drives six times mm-hmm. in six championships. Had pulled off another game-winning drive in the first Eli Super Bowl, and it got canceled by Eli going 83 yards.
That's a great luxury to have, to know you're not going to be in a shootout. And the one time he was in a shootout, what happened? He caught the L.
Well, he
turned into a shootout, Carolina, because there was no scoring, Skip, in the first quarter. Yeah. And then all of a sudden.
Was it 32-29?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, couldn't nobody stop anybody.
Yeah, but again, Brady set the all-time playoff passing record of 505 yards and put up 33 points and lost 41-33 to the backup quarterback mm-hmm. of the Philadelphia Eagles while Belichick.
Well, that disqualifies it. You can't lose to a backup.
But wait a second.
To a backup in Eli.
Coach Napoleon doghoused Malcolm Butler for the entire game after he led the defense in snaps played. I don't know what happened.
Help me understand.
Mysterious. Felt a little sabotaged.
Social media, I need y'all to help me understand. Because when we talked about The Last Dance for like 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and Skip said Michael Jordan was trying to motivate the guys, being tough, being difficult on them, being condescending, saying things, call them all out their name. Mm-hmm. Well, he's trying to win. Coach Belichick is, he's Napoleonic. Mm. He's a tyrant. Mm. He's a dictator. Mm. Wasn't he trying to win? They got the same results, got the same many titles, and he did it over a longer term. But you, one guy you like, Michael Jordan, the other guy you dislike, his way is wrong, but the other guy's right, even though they did it the exact same way and got the same results.
Bill Belichick played lacrosse at a Division III school. D3.
Skip.
Played lacrosse.
He wasn't playing.
Okay.
He was coaching. Mm. All I'm saying is the tactics that Michael Jordan used to motivate the guys, Coach Belichick used those same tactics.
Michael could all-time back it up.
He could, too.
How?
With that defense.
He could back it up because he had 12 playing quarterback.
He had that defense.
Yeah, that who validated him was 12.
Willie McGinnis. mm-hmm. Willie McGinnis is the all-time sack leader in playoff history. Ty Law getting pick sixes left and right.
Mm.
Vrabel catching touch. Look at that.
Mm. Brady, game-winning drive. Here we go again.
How do you get a game-winning drive if your defense give up 45?
Mm.
So Coach Belichick, defense keeps him in every game, and then Tom does what he does. Okay. Mm.
That's goatness to me, and that is case closed. Thank you.
No mercy.
In ESPN's latest positional rankings, Ezekiel Elliott came in as third overall running back behind Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey. One anonymous offensive coach who ranked Zeke 11 said the running back had, quote, very few breakout runs, doesn't look as strong anymore, feels like he's about 60 to 70% of what he was. We are now joined by Fox Sports NFL analyst and one of the greatest running backs of all time, Eric Dickerson. Eric, how much truth is in that quote?
You know, I don't think there's any truth in that. And, you know, I hate the word anonymous. If you're going to say it, say who you are. You know, just put it out there. I said it, and I mean it. You know, when I look at Zeke, you know, Zeke is still, I think, a great back. I think when you look at the things that has happened, his first season, he had one of the greatest seasons as a rookie ever had. The second greatest, after, you know, to mine, I got to say. And then, you know, you look at his you know, that, and after that football team, that was one of the best football teams in the league that year. I actually thought they had a chance to go to the Super Bowl. You know, the next year he had the legal problems, you know, the holdout, you know, and all that stuff to come along with it. So, you know, when you look at all that to go along with it, you know, it's not about all about Zeke, because Zeke, I think, is still that same back. But for some of reasons, you know, with the holdouts, you know, the legal problems, you know, all that plays in, that plays a factor. I can think about when I held out in 85. I came back and I was in shape. But, you know, and Shannon, you know this, you can't get in football shape. That's the hardest thing. You just cannot get in football shape. And I think one of the big things is the schemes they run. The Cowboys are a run-first football team. They talk about Zeke being 60 to 70%. The schemes are not good running the football. I think losing Bill Callahan was a big no-no. I mean, I look at the Cowboys. If they had Bill Callahan, I really believe that Zeke could put up 16 to 17, possibly 1,800 yards this year, because running the football, and I say this all the time, it's an art. It's not just about lining up and beating the man over you. Sometimes you have those games where you have to look, I've got a game where we just start to slug it out. It's a slugfest. And then you got a new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, who's like our faith. He likes to throw the football. That's just the facts. He wants to throw the football. So I think it's a lot of factors, not just Zeke. But I tell you, to me, the main thing is, the big no-no to me is Zeke pulling himself out of the game after, like, he has, like, a 20-yard run. I don't like that. I mean, because, I mean, you watch some of the clips. He leaves the game. They might be on the 10-yard line. All of a sudden, they're going in. They're looking strong. And now they settle for a field goal. I can go back. I just told this story yesterday. It's been times when we'd run the ball 6-7 times in a row, and I am taking such deep breaths. And you know this, Shannon. If you run down the field, you're going, and also you get that huddle. I just stop breathing. Okay, hand it off again. And I think that to me is one of the drawbacks on Zeke. He can't be taking himself out of football games.
Yeah, because you didn't want nobody else to get them yards. You like, I don't read it out here. I'm getting this ball in the end zone.
I'm getting that touchdown.
Edie, I agree with you, Edie. I don't think Zeke has changed much. I think the offensive has changed in the evolution because Dak throws the ball more. Edie, when you were in your prime early in the Rams, you guys probably rushed for more yards than you passed for because that's how it was. But now Zeke is rushing for 1,300 yards. They threw for almost 5,000 yards. There's only two other running backs that's ever enjoyed that type of rush season when the quarterback is throwing for 4,900 yards or more. That's Le'Veon Bell in 2014 and Marshall Faulk in 2000 and 2001. So it's hard. Plus the fact, E.D., you know, if you guys ever fell behind by 14 or 20 points, that took you out of the game because now we got to throw to get back into the ball game. You can't run your way into the game. You can run the clock and take the air out of the ball so the other team doesn't possess it, but you fall behind like the Cowboys were falling behind last year. 28 against Green Bay, 17 at Buffalo. They fall behind all these games, 14 to Minnesota. Skip, you can't run the ball. But if you look at Zeke's numbers, Zeke's numbers are very comparable as far as 10-yard runs, basically 8 carries. He averages a 10-yard run. His first 3 years was 7.9. Last year was 7.9. He's 4.5 yards per carry, but he's carrying the ball 3 fewer times per game over 16 games, which is 48 carries, 4.5 yards. So you're looking at roughly about 250 yards right there. 250 added on to 1350. You're looking at 1,600, and nobody's talking.
Mm.
Nope, right. Nobody's talking about that.
My turn. Eric Dickerson, I have told you to your face, I believe you are the greatest running back who ever played in this league. And I want so badly to agree with your opening assessment. You see no drop-off in Ezekiel Elliott. I love my man Zeke. I still have his little picture on my nightstand next to my bed. But I got to tell you, and I'm going to put my name to it. This isn't an anonymous quote. I saw about 70% of the Zeke I saw in his rookie year last year. I never saw quite right after that holdout, came late. As I kept telling Shannon, it looks like he's still running in Cabo Sand. And you went down there, Eric, to talk to him, to see him at the resort in Cabo. And and you saw him work out, and you told us you thought he looked pretty good. And when he first got in, and when he first signed, I thought he looked pretty good. And then to both of your points, there's sand shape, there's beach shape, and then there is National Football League shape.
Yeah.
And Eric, to your point, where he just tore my heart out, was it Thursday night against Chicago at Chicago? Yeah, it was a Thursday night game.
Yeah, right? Night.
Okay, so they're at Chicago. They're in the game late in the second quarter, and Zeke busts off his biggest run of the game, one of his biggest runs, I think, of the whole year, 32 yards. And they say, give it to him again. And they hand it to him, and he gets 4 yards. And he gets up out of the pile, and he waves to the sideline. I'm done. I'm gassed. And I just rolled on the floor. I said, and I thought Eric Dickerson. You think Eric Dickerson's taking himself out at that point? He might be heaving in the huddle. But he's going to say, give me the rock because I earned the right to take it home. What are you doing? That felt like fat cat syndrome where you said, I got my money. I got my $90 million. I'm good. I just need to go take a blow. I got to rest a little bit. I'll get them next time. Stop it. So, Eric, in the end, I'm sorry I didn't see that guy. And here's my favorite stat or my least favorite stat of the year. On first downs last year, Ezekiel Elliott had the second most carries in all of pro football. His average yards per rush on first down ranked 19th. Do the math. Second most carries, 19th best yards per carry on first down. You know what that meant? Second and 11, second and 10, second and 9. You're playing behind the chains. You tried to establish the run, and you failed. And all of a sudden, you're behind. And in the second half, what's going to happen? You're not going to run 21 anymore. You're going to let four throw it. And maybe to Shannon's point, he's going to pile up a whole bunch of empty calorie garbage yards. But that's how they played football last year, and I don't want to see it again. I still believe Zeke could be that guy. He just turned 25 years of age. I hope you're right, but I did not see it last year.
Skip, and one thing, and I said this earlier, when the Cowboys, and people don't understand how important it is for you have a guy that knows how to run the football, like a Bill Callahan.
Okay.
You know what? And losing. Frederick Douglass, you know, that's a big loss. You know, they don't understand when your offensive line is, in a sense, at times a Cowboys offensive line has been kind of decimated, or they're putting a piece here and a piece there. Even though they have one of the better offensive lines in the National Football League. You get used to those guys. You go back to Zeke's rookie year, everything was perfect. It really was. And I think people are looking for that again. They, you know, you think of the Dallas Cowboys, you think of perfection. I mean, I hate to say it, I'm not a Cowboy fan, but you think of everything going right. You know, everything is right in the world when the Cowboys win. The Cowboys run the football, everything is right. It just doesn't work like that all the time. And I agree with you with one thing, like I told you. I don't like when a back takes themselves out of a game in a big situation because that shows your heart. It really does. It shows that, look, I'm here for my team, and that no matter if I'm sucking air or whatever, it's game time, and I want to be in the game. But you know what? That's not just Zeke. You see that around the league. Almost a lot of players do that. Almost every player throw their hand, hey, I need to come out. And in the old days, Shannon, you know, you didn't do that.
No.
You came out when you were hurt. You couldn't hardly walk. Or maybe you came out for one play, but you're going back in, and that's it. But I still feel like he's the same Zeke. Look, if he's the third best back in the National Football League, and I think he's better than that. I mean, I really do. I think he's right. Maybe you could put him 1-2, you know, right in that 2-3, whatever. But I still think he's the same guy. I think he'll show this year. I think everything, if we have a football season, I think everything going forward, because I think the Dallas Cowboys and Zeke want to show that we are still the best running football team in the National Football League. Zeke wants to show you may say I'm third, I'm still the best running back in the National Football League. It becomes ego. And just like we're talking about it, he'll hear about this, like not leaving the game. So if he does it this year, leaves the game, then I can't protect it because I'm just not big on players throwing their hand up. If they've had a big run, hey, man, you got to stay in that game. That's part of the deal. I mean, that's what you signed up for. You signed up to play running back. You didn't kind of sign up to stand on the sidelines.
But, E.D., when I look at Zeke has never been – that back like you, that could go 80,
that could go 90, that could go 70. Zeke is a guy 5 yard, a 6 yard, a 1 yard, a no yard, 5 yard, 8 yard, 10 yard. Zeke has never been, see, Skip is still so caught up in Zeke. Those last four games his sophomore season, when he ran Ohio State to the national title game,
he did.
And he expected him to come do that. That's not.
Well, I saw a lot of that his rookie year. I did.
Rookie year.
Yep.
But here's the thing, though, ED, and I told him, I say Saquon is a different runner than Zeke. Saquon might go no yards, 1 yard, 85. And then at the end of the day, you look at it, he got 130 yards rushing, but Skip was like, well, he only had one big run. Well, what do you want? You want the big run or you want Zeke that's constantly giving you 8, 5, 6? Because they're totally different runners in that aspect. Christian McCaffrey's another guy that has home run capability. We saw him break off those 50, those 60-yard runs. We haven't seen Zeke do that. We've seen Zeke get some 20s and 30s, but we haven't seen Zeke except that one, that screen pass he caught in Pittsburgh, Skip. He hit his head on the goalpost from 80.
His rookie year.
Other than that, Skip, right? We don't see no 50s.
And remember, last year, he had only 4 20-plus yard runs. That tied for 23rd in the league. That's just wrong. This man did run 4.4 coming out of college. He ran 4. He doesn't seem to play at 4.4 speed. I don't see the 4.4 make you miss kind of speed. But I saw a lot more quickness, speed, and elusivity as a rookie than I'm seeing now in a fourth year in which he got $90 million.
You know, that's one of the problems that I think a lot of people, when you get paid,
yep.
and you're not playing well, or your team not playing well, all of a sudden they bring the money, and the money becomes a factor. Always.
Well,
you know, it's not about that. You know, as a football player, you know, you have pride. You want to play well. And you're right, Shannon. Zeke was never that guy that's going to go 80 yards. I never saw that in him. If he can give you 25, 30, that's great. That one play, and I just talked about this yesterday, we haven't talked about Zeke. And the big run he had in Pittsburgh, and I'm like, that was a big run.
Right.
But you don't see a lot of those. Even when I ran for 2,000 yards, go back and look. I didn't have a lot of 70 and 80 yard runs. I didn't. I had that my rookie year, but I had like the 25. It was a grind out. Sometimes I'd have a 25, a 15, a 10. I might have another 25, but it wasn't those 60, 70 yards. Those are rare. You know, you see Saquon's that guy. He'll give you 0, 0, 3. 75, 0, 0, 25. You know, that's the guy. Zeke's not that kind of back. I mean, and I think that's what you're looking for. You're going back to his rookie season. The rookie season is over with. You're never going to be, he's never going to be a rookie again. He's never going to have those fresh legs again, even though, to me, he is still one of the top backs in the National Football League.
All right, so here's one other ramification from what Zeke didn't do last year. I believe that Jerry Jones sat back, watched Zeke last year. I think he mostly agreed more with this premise of he was about 70%, especially of rookie year Zeke, after he got $90 million, made him the highest paid running back in pro football. And I believe Jerry started to wonder, did I overpay Zeke? And am I about to then overpay Dak even more? Because Dak's contract is, what, twice as big?
It's more than twice as big.
So I believe psychologically, Jerry got a little gun shy watching Zeke not quite live up to $15 million a year and $90 million total. And he's thinking, man, do I want to do this again? I can't then go into double jeopardy by overpaying my quarterback because that is salary cap hell if you do that. So I think that was operating off Zeke's quote-unquote down year last year.
Yeah, but, you know, first of all, the Cowboys had a down year. You know, they were 8-8. If they would have been 11-5 or 12-4, we probably wouldn't have this conversation. You know, they weren't that good. I mean, you might not want to say it, but they weren't a very good football team. Sometimes they'd say, oh, wow, they look great. And the next week, like, who's that team? And I think that's what it comes down to. If Jerry would have saw them play like they did, I'm going to go back to Zeke's rookie year. if he'd have saw that football team, and everybody was coming up, say, for a contract, I don't think Jerry would have a problem paying him. He'd say, hey, let's pay him. You know, everybody's playing great. And so that's what it comes down to. It's not what have you done for me 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's what have you done for me right now. And, you know, it's just been like I said, last year was a down season, and that's what it was.
Yeah. Going to be down again.
Better be careful.
Only Eagle. Time will tell. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
way to go, Eagle.
Coming on the show.
No mercy.